Welcome back to the One Short Cricket Podcast with me, your host today, Michael. I'm back after missing last week's podcast, but you guys did a very good job without me. Of course, talking about the IPL today, we're going to be talking about a little bit of IPL and a little bit of County Champs as well. I'm joined by Toby and Ayush, as always. How are you guys doing, Toby? How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. Looking forward to getting into it. Obviously, the first week was a little bit washed out. I think there was only one result. But yeah, looking forward to talking a bit more about it and the rest of the season ahead.
Yeah, Ayush, how are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. It's been a few hectic days, but yeah, cricket's kind of catching pace as well. The IPL 2 county championships are finally kind of getting into the groove. So yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun. So a lot to talk about. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so let's start with the IPL. Just go through what's been happening since you guys talked about it. I mean, if you want a more in-depth look at the IPL, go back to last week's episode. You guys covered each team, how each team's doing in a lot of detail. But since then, I think let's start with Rajasthan Royals, who are still top of the table. They had a bit of a blip midweek, losing to Gujarat Titans, but they've bounced back, beating Punjab Kings yesterday, I believe. They made hard work of the chase, didn't they? Jaiswal top scoring on 38, but they got there in the end with a ball to spare. Hetmyer was the key player, scoring 27 off 10, not out at the end of the innings to secure the chase. Ayush, do you think they're the favourites for the IPL now, like after this strong start?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to call them really the favourites. I mean, I think they're going to finish top two given the way they've started. We've seen teams who start this way almost always end up at least top two. You know, they're going to make the playoffs because they're a confident team. They're a brilliant team. Toby and I spoke about it last time as well, that they definitely look like the strongest team. I mean, when it comes to winning the title, we've seen teams third and fourth, who finish third and fourth, maybe sometimes barely make it to the playoffs, also end up winning the title just on experience, right? Mumbai Indians in the past as well have started similar to the way they've started this season, have somehow made it to the playoffs, and then go on and end up winning the entire thing because of the experience that they won a couple of tournaments before. Then they know it's more of been there and done that kind of situation. So Rajasthan haven't won a title since the first one, since the Shane Warne title. They made a final just a couple of seasons ago. So yeah, they've recently with almost a team that's almost the same a couple of years ago reached the final, just fell short to Hardik Pandya's Gujarat back then. So I think they can definitely do it. I'm not sure if they are the favorites, given that if teams like CSK and Mumbai make it, you've got to back one of them. Given, I mean, at the end of the day, they have five titles each, right? But you can see that Rajasthan have got it in them. Yeah, that I mean, they should have been six wins out of six by now, because you know if that game against Gujarat, which they lost last ball, they should have really won it. If not for Rashid and Tevatia and a couple of the other Gujarat players chasing. But again, yesterday, they got over the line, one ball to spare, key players coming in action again. So yeah, I think they're good. They're very good. Definitely strong contenders.
Yeah, I mean, Toby, you kind of touched on it there. They lost against Gujarat Titans midweek. Where do you think they came up short there? What do you think went wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tough one. The fact that they've lost a game, I don't think necessarily proves that they're a bad team. I think the IPL is so long and so random in so many ways. As most franchise cricket tournaments, losing a game isn't the end of the world. And I think it's very rare that, particularly in a tournament this long with so many games, a team will go unbeaten. If they do, they are undeniably the best team. And probably with a bit of luck in there as well. I think when they played with Gujarat, they played all right, to be fair. I thought generally, I mean, they kind of just fell fell into a Rashid Khan masterclass, really, who what bowled one for 18 or four overs and was started to look like he was his old self again, having struggles earlier on in the tournament a bit. Well, struggled by his own standards, not necessarily as many other people could consider it. But then, yeah, him at the death as well with Tuatia just blasted around, really. Shubman Gill gave him a really good platform with Sai Sundaresan at the top, and then they kind of just continued at the rate, which is sounds simple enough, but they were in the game the whole time. I think they went off for rain at one point when they were about one down, and I thought they were well out of it. I thought they were behind the rate, but I think the fact that they were only one down and had a load of wickets in hand at about the halfway mark kind of suggested that they knew what they were going to try and do in the chase and really bat deep and go as long as they can and just stay in the game rather than some teams. I mean, Rajasthan a little bit like that will try and knock off a chase early doors and they'll go big at the beginning with Jaiswal and Butler and Samson and they will try and sort of hit themselves into a good position which they can almost relax into the chase. Whereas it looked like Gujarat Titans and it worked for them. Sort of just wanted to stay in the game as long as possible, knowing they had some big power hitters down the order, and yeah, it worked for them that time. And it might not work another time, but doesn't really matter in the long run. I think Rajasthan still look like a really, really good side, in the tournament and a really all-round side. Even the game yesterday where they didn't have Ashwin, they didn't have Butler, but they still won, which is what you really need. You need these sort of slightly smaller games, which aren't necessarily between the sort of two big titans of it. Obviously, Rajasthan playing well, but Punjab aren't particularly great at the moment. And they won that, and that's almost more important, I think, is winning these kind of little games on the side, which almost don't seem like much now, but could be a crucial 2 points when it comes towards the back end of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, just to go back to you, Toby. You mentioned Jos Buttler there. From an in England fan's perspective, how do you think he's looked so far? Because he's been a bit short of form recently, hasn't he? Looking ahead to that T20 World Cup in the summer. Obviously, got the century against RCB. Kind of look back to his best there. Yeah, what do you make of his form going into the summer?
Yeah, it's a really tough one with Butler. I mean, he has really struggled. He scored only 143 runs, and 100 of those came from one innings. Like, he's really not been his old self, which is a bit of a shame. I don't know whether, you know, it might come back to him throughout the tournament, and obviously that big 100 does change things. That was literally happening while me and Aisha were recording the last podcast. We were sort of sat there both before the podcast thinking, well, you know, Butler's probably been, you know, Rajasthan's worst player, and then cut to half an hour into the podcast, we're like, Butler's probably Rajasthan's best player. Just the fact that obviously it wasn't quite as big as that, but just the fact they had one big knock and started to find some form. I think if he can, he really does need to try and pounce on that, and the fact that he has found a little bit of a run scoring form. I think if he can try and build on it and develop it and stick with it, he'll be in a much stronger position. But I don't know. It does bring up a bit of question, a few question marks for the World Cup ahead and whether he should open, whether he should still be in the team. I think he should still be in the team and he probably will still open just because he's captain and it's probably where he thinks he's best utilised. When you have the likes of Phil Salt, Will Jacks, Johnny Bairstow, even David Malan and Jason Roy can kind of be thrown into it. Like, there's a lot of quality with England's opening options, and I think maybe he could be utilized a bit lower down the order. I saw the stats. He has got the worst dot ball percentage. So he has the him and Jaiswal have the two most number of dot balls as percentage of balls faced in the whole IPL over the last 4 or 5 seasons, and it means I think he has to be partnered probably with someone quite explosive at the top if he is going to open for England, which will likely be Phil Salt. And I think that could be a very good partnership. We saw it really, really worked really, really well for Manchester Originals last summer at the Hundreds. They were probably the best opening partnership, possibly the best two batters in the tournament. And so, yeah, I think you have to hope he can find a bit of form again. And he's proven he is, and he is a world-class player. Like, there's no denying that. He's probably England's best ever white ball player. Definitely best ever white ball batter. And I think he should still be in the team on merit, and I think he will be, and it is just about him finding a bit of form.
Yeah, I mean, what one team you guys were very harsh on in the podcast on the weekend was Mumbai Indians. But they've made a bit of a comeback, haven't they? They beat RCB on Thursday emphatically. Hardik scored, I mean, this wasn't the best innings, but Hardik scored 21 off 6, 350 strike rate from him. But yeah, arguably more impressively, Ishan Kishan at the top of the order scored 69 off 34, and Sky scored 52 off just 19. And this was after their victory over Delhi Capitals last Sunday, where they scored 234 for 5. Interestingly, in that innings, no one went above a half century, which is pretty crazy. But Rohit came close with 49, and Ramari Shepherd, an amazing 39 off 10 in that innings. Ayush, how what do you make of this kind of comeback from Mumbai Indians? And yeah, how far do you think they can go looking going forward?
Yeah, that's a very interesting stat that you mentioned that, you know, when they scored 234 against Delhi last week, no one got to 50. And I think that was sort of a record, which is, I think it was the highest score in a T20 game without anyone reaching a half century. So yeah, that was pretty crazy. But yeah, their comeback, I mean, this is what they do, right? They get off to like the worst of starts. Everyone's talking about Mumbai Indians not happening for them this season. Surely they can't repeat it. Surely they can't do it again after losing the first few games. And then they've put in two like absolutely dominant performances. That game against Delhi on very flat track afternoon game, flat track afternoon game at the Wankhede, where we usually see so many runs being scored. 234 with I think they found their X factor now in Romario Shepherd. Just that incredible innings, right? And that was the difference. Tim David did so well. A couple of the guys up top, Rohit and Ishan, they all did well. And then Romario Shepherd. And Delhi also scored, what, 200, but they still lost the game by 29 runs. So, yeah, that was kind of a big confidence boosting game. And then things just got so much better against RCB because, again, it favorably for them, they were chasing on that Wankhede wicket with so much dew. And when you're chasing against RCB, it's almost a sure shot victory, right? Given RCB's bowling struggle. So, but again, everything clicked for them. Jasprit Bumrah doing things that only Jasprit Bumrah can do in world cricket. And then all of their batters effectively chipping in. And I spoke about it the last time, Toby, we spoke about it. Surya Kumar Yadav is going to be the main man. And he comes in, got a first ball, I thought first or the second ball duck in his first game back last weekend, and then comes in, scores a 19, 18 ball half century. And that's, again, playing shots that only Surya Kumar Yadav can play. They have these players. They have these players who can do things that no one else can do. Bumrah, Sky, Rohit Sharma, a few things only he can do as well. And to top it all off, the crowd has now finally gotten behind Hardik Pandya. The last game, as soon as he came out to bat, you know, from all those boos, like in a blink of an eye, the people would, like the entire ground, 30,000 people were cheering for Hardik Pandya. And then he answers by hitting a first ball six. So now even he's getting confidence. And yeah, just chasing whatever the wicket is, chasing 190. Six in 15 and a half overs, that's going to give them a lot of confidence going forward. And of course, this is a team, I mentioned it last week as well. This is a team that has the capability, that has the players to go all the way. Just their spin bowling is a little bit of a worry, but guys like Shreyas Gopal, Mohammad Nabi, good players, good options to have in there as well. And I think there's a team that can go far, and let's see what they can do. There's another big game coming up today. The biggest rivalry in the IPL, I think Mumbai and Chennai later today. So that's going to be a big game at Wankhede as well, where Chennai have, I think, beaten them more often than not. So yeah, this is going to be interesting. But yeah, I think this team is confident and they're just going to get better with
Yeah, I
Sky
mean,
in especially.
yeah, Toby, Ayush mentioned the Mumbai Indians kind of have this tendency to get off to quite a slow start in the IPL. Why do you think that is? Is there a reason for that, or is it just coincidence?
I don't know really. I think it's possibly to do with maybe some management issues. They always seem to to not find their best starting 11 until 4 or 5 games in. I mean, Naby wasn't in the starting 11 at the beginning of the tournament, and now he's been really, really good for the last few games when he has played for them, and actually given them a lot more spin options through the middle, as well as some lower order hitting. And yeah, I think they maybe don't necessarily try too much, but they're never quite sure going into the tournament what their best 11 is. And I mean, you can kind of see that. I think it didn't help Sky was injured as well this year, as Ayush mentioned, which is yet another reason why they haven't perhaps got the best team, because they're trying to shuffle things around. They're trying to work out who do we bat at three. And I think, Sky coming back in, in franchise tournaments like these, you basically win them or lose them, I think, on the quality of your domestic players, realistically. And having someone of Sky's quality, who can come in below Kishan and Sharma, who are two of India's best openers, possibly will open later on in the World Cup this year as well. I think kind of shows their strength, and having such a strong domestic core is kind of what teams always need. And if maybe they don't get off to the best start, then that's not an issue if they have the ability to bounce back like Mumbai do. And I think, yeah, perhaps the fact that they haven't quite selected their best team so far, or they never seem to at the beginning of a tournament, maybe shows that there's some backroom issues, and maybe I don't really know what Mumbai are like, and how well they're run. And I'm sure Aish can tell us a bit more about this, but perhaps, yeah, the fact that they're not quite as clear in their sort of auction, sort of selection, perhaps, and maybe there's a few too many voices. I think the fact that Hardik has come in as captain as well this year kind of shifts things around. I'm sure that they were maybe thinking of building a team, particularly the last couple of years, around Rohit and what Rohit wants, and there's definitely a change in vision, maybe. I mean, the fact that Hardik's sort of gives himself the new ball and says, you know what, this is what I want, I'm gonna go and do it. He backs himself at four in a prime position. Maybe there's just a few sort of settling in issues, and I'm sure that there's a bit of change every year, which they maybe always seem to have an issue with.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Sky there. Ayush, do you think, is he, I mean, India have so many options for that T20 World Cup team in the summer, but is he going to get into that team, do you think?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Sky will be, in my opinion, the most important player for India at that World Cup, because he has been, I think, the world's best T20 batter, not just India's, over the last couple of years, 2, 3 years, whatever. He again, it's just that he can play those shots, he can do things that no one else can do. And we're gonna be in He plays similar wherever he goes, right? Whatever the conditions are, whatever the pitch is, whoever the opposition is. It's going to be, in those conditions in the Caribbean and the USA. I'm sure some of those drop-in pitches, especially in the USA, will be like batting paradises or things like that. But we'll still see, especially in the Caribbean, we'll still see a lot of low, slow kind of wickets. We've seen that in the past over there as well. And that's where someone like Sky will be even more important, because he's not going to give you, even if it's a slow wicket, even if it's like a 150, 160 game, he's still, I mean, even if he gets out early, he's still going to score whatever 15 or 20 runs at a strike rate of probably 200, if not like 180, 200, something like that. And in those games, he is going to be the difference. And even on good batting tracks, he's gonna score these 17 ball 50s, 20 ball 60s, or whatever. And yeah, it's just very difficult to plan for him in T20 cricket, because he can literally play everywhere. It's like AB de Villiers, right? You could come up with plans against AB de Villiers, but just because he had this range where he could hit shots absolutely everywhere of any kind of bowler, you just had to hope that he has a bad day and gets out early. So that's the same thing with Sky. So I think he's absolute certainty. Probably will bat at the same number he bats for Mumbai, number four, and that he's batted at the same number for India. T20, the last T20 World Cup, in T20s the last couple of years as well. And yeah, I think he's going to be the most important player for us in that World Cup, at least in the batting.
Yeah, I mean, another player who's going to be really important for India is Jasprit Bumrah, isn't it? I mean, he's on that Mumbai Indians team as well. I mean, it's crazy to think they had such a slow start with the players that they've got. I mean, Toby, is he for what he's doing in every format of the game? Do you think is he the most valuable player in the world at the moment? I think he's got to be.
He's definitely up there. I think he's the most valuable seam bowler comfortably. He's probably maybe top three, top five. I think just the fact that maybe all-rounders can have a bit more of an effect. But I think when you actually look at how good he is leagues above anyone else. I mean, what was it? The game against Sunrisers where it was only him and Cummins basically that went under tens. And you think, oh, Bumrah going at nine in a bit, that's pretty poor from him, you know, his usual standards. But when you compare him to everyone else, and I mean, he took what 5 for 20 a couple of days ago as well. And yeah, he just alongside I think Rashid Khan and a couple other probably just Rashid Khan, when they're on form, you know you have no chance of getting them away. You have no chance of scoring off them. You basically have to try and see them off and capitalize on the other seamers around, the other spinners around. And know that, okay, if we're only going to score at, you know, a run a ball against Bumrah, fine, we'll take it. But it means that you then know you have to attack and you have to try and capitalize on the other seamers and the other bowlers, which in itself means they become more dangerous because everyone has to try and overattack against them. So he doesn't just sort of he doesn't it's not just about him, it's actually about how he can impact the other bowlers around him and the fact that he can actually make them more dangerous as well, which is a worry in itself. That you know how good he's been and actually how good Mumbai have been in the last few games and I think it'll only get better and he'll only make other bowlers better around him when he plays an international stage with even higher quality attack which India will have because they are one of the best teams in the world.
Yeah, okay, so what are your predictions for the playoffs, guys? I'm not gonna add mine, but what are you guys gonna say? Top four?
I think there's probably a comfortable three. I say comfortable slightly cautiously, but I think Rajasthan, KKR, and CSK probably do look like the best three sides in the competition. It'll be interesting to see maybe how they keep going. And I mean, they've obviously all lost games now as well, so they're definitely not infallible. But I think generally, when you look at their 11s, they do just look a bit sort of more all-round developed. And I think they're going to have a surge. We've talked about them a lot today, but probably Mumbai for me are actually in a very good position to race up the table and make the playoffs. And weirdly, I think KKR, who were top for a long time and still could go top, they've got a couple of games in hand on Rajasthan, probably look like the most likely to drop out of that top four for me. Just I think even though Mumbai have come from so far and CSK haven't looked as good as they have been, you know, the last few years, I think just the fact that they know how to win, I think is absolutely crucial in a tournament like this. You get to the semi-finals and the back end of the group stage, and having players like Dhoni and Hardik and Sharma and Jadeja and all of these guys who have won five titles already on their own, basically, will know what it takes and will know that they can do it. I think just gives them that bit of an edge. KKR and Rajasthan haven't won it. None of the players will have won the IPL really. You mean maybe Trent Bolt and what Andre Russell maybe. I don't even know if Andre Russell's won it. I think that the squads won't be as confident in some ways. Even if it's just subconscious and in the back of their minds, I think can have a bit of an effect. So for me, yeah, I think Rajasthan, KKR, CSK, and Mumbai are probably my four to get through, with KKR weirdly the ones on the edge for me.
Okay, Aish, what about you?
Yeah, I know. I agree with a lot of what Toby said there. You know, Rajasthan definitely look like they're in. I said that a few minutes ago as well. CSK again. And with CSK, I mean, that's the team that is the favorites to win probably all of their home games. Might just lose one here and there, but that's a team that's going to win like all of their home games because it's the toughest place to go in the IPL, to go there and beat CSK. Teams know how to play there in Chennai. But it's just that Chennai know those conditions so much better than everyone else. That even if, you know, they're backed into a corner, they just know how to come out, and they come out swinging. And I think all three wins for CSK have come in Chennai, so they're already unbeaten at home so far. It really is a fortress for them. And so I think that, yeah, they will get through. Dhoni is still there. While, again, as said last time as well, Gaikwad looks, I'm really happy to see that Gaikwad is taking his own decisions and he's not depending on Dhoni as much as Jadeja was depending on Dhoni in that, in those 5 or 6 minutes that Ravindra Jadeja was captain for CSK. But I mean, I think they'll make it through, definitely. KKR again, see, as we're talking as well, Sunil Narayan's putting in a really miserly spell. Russell's among the wickets. They've got these guys who were so key to them winning the two titles that they won. And another main guy, Gautam Gambhir, is back in the squad as well. He's not playing, but he's leading the think tank for them. So they've got everything ticking for them as well. So I think KKR will make it in. And they're confident as well. And then that fourth spot. Yeah, I agree with Toby there. I think Mumbai will probably make it in because the experience and, you know, they're calm even though after losing the first three games, because again, they've lost five and still ended up winning the title a few years ago. So they, and Hardik Pandya is a calm, composed guy, just generally. He's got Rohit with him as well. And we've already spoken about guys like Sky and Bumrah. So it's going to be tough, I think, you know, with LSG, SRH, Gujarat, also all of them fighting. But if I had to pick a four right now, I would say not in that order, but Rajasthan, CSK, KKR, and Mumbai probably.
Yeah, I think the one thing we also can't forget as well is we're not even a third of the way into the tournament. Obviously, Rajasthan are in a much better position. They're what, two wins clear, obviously some game in hands below them. But I think it's one of those you need to get wins on the board as early as you can, obviously, which is sounds like so simple and so obvious when you say it. But the fact that Rajasthan, even though they have, you know, could be caught with games in hand, everyone will beat everyone in this tournament. Is that kind of feeling? Obviously, you know, maybe RCB and Delhi won't beat teams because they're not as good, but they've still got points on the board, they've still won. And the fact that Rajasthan have 10 points on the board, they know they've got five wins, which obviously won't be enough, but it's probably about half of what you need to qualify. They know they're in a really strong position and don't have to worry about, oh, you know, if we win these two games, we'll go top kind of thing. They know they are top and they're in a really strong position with a lot of teams almost focusing on trying to catch them now. And there's still a long way to go as well, which I think you really can't sort of forget about. You know, it's all it'll take is a couple victories from teams lower down, as like Mumbai, as we've talked about. You know, Gujarat have always been good in the two seasons they've been in. They've got to the final both times, obviously missing Hardik, but I always really like Gujarat as well. I think that they could put in a push, particularly if Rishi Khan finds a bit of form. He's such a crucial player. I was completely shocked when Sunrisers let him go at the last mega auction. I thought that was the most bat crazy decision ever. You have probably the best player, the best T20 player in the world at the time, and arguably still up there now, or definitely is still up there now. And they decided to let him go. It was absolutely mental. No, I don't really know what was going on at Sunrise at the time. But yeah, I've diverged. I've moved across. Let's. Yeah, I agree with Ayush though. I think that's the same. That's the four that probably are in the probably even though Mumbai aren't in the best position, I think they're still up there.
What do you make of Mitch Marsh has torn his hamstring, and he's going back to Australia, ahead of captaining Australia probably in the T20 World Cup in the summer if he returns fit. How big a blow is that for Delhi Capitals? I mean, he hasn't really done very well in the IPL so far. He hasn't had a good start. Well, he didn't have a good start, and now it's you know, all over for him. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think, like I said, he didn't have a good start, but again, he's the kind of player who just needs the one good innings or one good bowling innings, and he's gonna be like, he'll get back in form, and he's such an important player for them. Everything that he can do, it just puts the onus more on guys like David Warner, Prithvi Shaw, especially Warner and Pant. But Yeah, I think again, it's it, I read somewhere it was a partial tear in the hamstring, but yeah, you have to be careful with the T20 World Cup, right? Because his focus and Australia's focus will be that he doesn't kind of really stretch himself unnecessarily at the IPL, even if he would have stayed there and recovered in a few days or weeks' time. But yeah, I think that, and that's what Australia will do with the T20 World Cup coming up. They won't care about the IPL that much. You'll gradually maybe see other Australian players come up with injuries and back off and go home and take some rest and prep for the World Cup as well. We've seen them do that before, but it makes sense. Like, you get why they are doing that, because they want to win every ICC tournament that they participate in, right? And so yeah, it's going to be a big blow for Delhi, to be honest. They had a very good win, I think it was yesterday, was it? No, a couple of days ago. Really good win for them against LSG. And they needed that win because they were really struggling as well, similar to RCB. But yeah, I think as far as their eventual aim, that is qualifying for the playoffs, Mitchell Marsh is definitely a big blow, even though he's not had the best of starts.
Okay, we should probably move on to County Champs now. We've been talking about the IPL for too long, but it's hard not to. There's so much going on. Just quickly, though, before we do, I want to make a bold prediction because we love a bold prediction on this podcast. I think Mumbai Indians will win the IPL.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I just think their squad's too good. And it's
We've
like Australia in the World Cup, coming back from
convinced
a
you
slow
through.
start.
We've convinced you throughout the podcast, Michael, with the amount we've talked about them
Yeah.
and talked them up. This is when
Yeah.
Mumbai now go on and have the worst run in history and don't win another game, and everyone gets injured and they go horribly badly.
Yeah, I mean, well, like I said, I haven't really been following it too closely, but I've just been looking at Mumbai Indians squad and there's too many good players. They've got to do well. But yeah, anyway, County Champs. It's been going on for about 9 days now since it started. There's been a lot of rain effects in play, but there are some big talking points. The biggest is probably that Sam Northeast innings, Toby. So let's start there. His 335 not out didn't take Glamorgan to victory over Middlesex because they responded with a massive 655 all out. Ryan Higgins scoring a massive 221, which kind of hasn't been talked about because obviously Northeast innings was so big. But yeah, Toby, what do you make of that game? I mean, massive game. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, absolute run fest, I think. I can't remember who it was. Someone got basically no runs. And I just feel so bad for the fact that you've got to sit in the inside and just watch your team score billions. And then yeah, here it is. Zainul Hasan scored 5 off 19 in the first innings. He got out in the sixth over. And then watched Billy Root score 67, Sam Northeast 335, Kieran Carlson 77, and Colin Ingram 132 before fielding for the next what is it, 200 overs. Oh my God, I didn't even realize that. Fielded for 200 overs. Higgins double 100, Mark Stoneman 97, just for him to come in again and score 2 off 6 in the second innings. It's just not really that's not what you want at all for as an opening batter. But yeah, it was an absolutely crazy game, and weirdly, it's kind of what you come to expect with Glamorgan. I think they only won they only were involved in yeah Glamorgan were only involved in two results last season. Obviously, most of them would be flat tracks at home in Sapphire Gardens, but I think it is. It's kind of a thing that's been around in the County Championship for a while. There's a lot of draws, partly because it is so rain affected, but also there wouldn't have been a result even if they didn't have any rain in Glamorgan, Middlesex. And I think there possibly wasn't even much rain in the game. And yeah, I mean, Sam Northeast, I think, big question. He never played for England, never got the opportunity. And I think you're talking to Wisden or Talksport or someone recently, and sort of saying he's kind of put the England stuff behind him. He's getting on a bit. He's in his 30s, and it kind of brings up he scored a load of big scores recently. Is he one of the best players never to play for England? He scored a 400, I think, last season, 300 here. He's scored a load of runs, And has been a fantastic county championship player for what the last decade. He's 34 now, yeah. And averages of 40 in first class cricket. That's very, very respectable and very, very good stats to have behind him. And yeah, maybe, if you look at it in the past, if he got a bit lucky with selections, someone he goes out to Australia maybe instead of James Vince for 2017-18 Ashes, he could have been, an England player and his career is very, very different. But I think you also can't take away from the fact that he's been probably one of the most solid and not average, average is harsh, but he's had one of the best averages most years for the County Championship.
Yeah, I mean, scores in that game were just crazy, weren't they? I mean, it shows. I guess the pitch was very flat, but also there's the Kookaburra ball being used, and there's a lot of talk about that in the county champs. I think Rob Key is the guy behind that decision. It's kind of been done in preparation for the Ashes in Australia. But Ayush, what do you make of that? Do you kind of agree with it?
Yeah, I think they've gone from what was it, two rounds where the Kookaburra was used last year to four this year. Yeah, they want to prepare for the Ashes. And I get that because, the last few Ashes down under haven't been good. But yeah, again, to do that, I don't know, four rounds in the county championships. Again, it's not like the dominant number of rounds is the Kookaburra. You're still playing with the Duke ball, which is what is used around here, and kind of helps your players domestically also grow, in those conditions playing with the Duke ball, which is, I think, more important because, yeah, you want to prepare for the Ashes, but you still do not, you still play the Ashes down under once every 4 years, is it 3 or 4 years, whatever it is? So yeah, you don't want to make decisions that are dominantly in preparation for an Ashes series down under, because eventually the aim is to build players who can play, domestically in the conditions that you find over here. And I think it's a good move. To go, to have, because on the flip side of it, it's you're not just playing with a Duke ball, you're giving people, more of an exposure to that Kookaburra ball, and giving them the exposure to play in those different conditions wherever they go as well, right? Because I think Australia is probably not the only country where the ball is used, so it gives you kind of that experience of playing with that. So I think it's a good move, definitely. But yeah, they need to be careful that you don't want to kind of give way too much importance on winning the Ashes down under, because at the end of the day, kind of build those players who are more capable or kind of more able to play in the local domestic conditions. Because in back in India as well, we talk about so much where there was a phase where we saw that, Indian players themselves, we saw it with the national team as well, but in the Ranji Trophy as well, where players were just not, players were actually struggling more against spin bowling. And that's not what's supposed to happen. You're going to be like Indian players are supposed to be the best in the world at playing spin. But, and that's when, we started to kind of test. And again, that was a move where you saw a bit more fast bowling friendly wickets so that India would go and play better abroad. But then they realized that, okay, we can't make decisions heavily in that way where you're having more and more green fast bowling wickets just to prepare for series abroad, because the basics are that you want to win at home more often than not, and yet your batting should not struggle against spin. So yeah, and then they kind of they found that balance between the pitch preparation. And yeah, I think this is a good balance here as well. It's just they need to be careful to not really get carried away with it.
I think interestingly there from Ayush, it was he said what a minute ago now, but the fact that England shouldn't be so focused on just beating Australia and focus on there. Whereas, I mean, it's interesting to hear from a less sort of England centric mindset. Whereas I think over here it is almost all focused on and I think coaches and players are
Yeah, it
judged
is.
on Ashes Down Under. I mean, you win in the UK or you get a draw over here. Obviously, I think it feels bigger because it's in your own country and it feels like the whole country gets around the Ashes when it comes around. And I mean, it definitely has in the last couple times. But I think coaches and players are made and judged on how they do it in Australia and in England. It's very interesting. I think it's India and Australia, obviously the big ones. If you go and win a series in the West Indies or Pakistan, it's obviously, oh great, we won an away series. You know, that's a massive feat and something you should be really proud of in cricket generally, definitely. But I don't think it'll ever be as big as getting an Ashes victory or a series against India victory. I think those are what everyone basically focuses on in England, and that is why you've hit the nail on the head, Ayush. That is why they want to bring the Kookaburra in to try and get bowlers more ready for Ashes down under. But I think you also have to realize that a wet day in Nottinghamshire is very different from the Wacker where or the Gabba, where it's going to bounce massively and it's completely different conditions, not only temperature but the pitches and the outfield in itself are completely different. It's very harsh generally, and takes a lot of the lacquer and the shine off the ball in Australia, whereas you're actually just going to get a bit damper and a bit softer the ball over here, which is almost the opposite of what you get in Australia. So I think it's an interesting one. It's hard to tell because actually, two overs at the two sort of rounds at the beginning of the season and two in the middle of June isn't really a big enough sample size to get to sort of suggest whether it's working or not. So I don't know. I don't mind the idea of it. It perhaps shouldn't be done at the beginning of the season, I think, because it is so wet, and I think the Jukes does hold up better generally as a ball in these kind of conditions. A lot of players talk about how after 5 or 10 overs even, the Kookaburra feels completely different and actually is almost more of a sort of a blunt instrument, whereas the Jukes you at least sort of get 20, 25 overs out of before it goes a bit flat. And I guess if you want to try and see how bowlers can develop their skills if the ball isn't doing anything, then actually, it's not a bad option to use it at the beginning of the season and to use a Kookaburra. But if you're trying to use it specifically for Australia, I think you're never really going to get the benefit from it just because it's such different conditions over here than it is to Australia.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, Ayush, another change that's been made in the county championship this year is the move back to 8 points for a draw instead of five. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it was again, I mean, it was eight, then they went to five. They tried that out, and for some reason, they're not happy with that experiment. So now they're back to eight. But I don't know. I mean, I was talking to Toby about it earlier as well. And was it really a failed experiment? I mean, was there really too many problems with that 5 points for a draw? Now, kind of going back to eight. I don't know. I mean, I'm not quite sure why they've reverted. Going back to eight, kind of just giving so that because there are so many draws that do happen, and especially, I mean, we've seen like the first, what is it, the first round that we saw where there was just one result, right? I think it was the Kent and Somerset game, was it? Or I don't know, I'm not sure. I think it was
Nottinghamshire
the
Essex.
Essex. Yeah, I
Yeah.
think it was the Essex game that had the result, and everything else was drawn. And in that situation, kind of teams, yeah, would feel better getting 8 points rather than 5 points or whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, Toby, I don't know. I'm not sure why kind of move back, why kind of think that the 5 points was a really failed experiment.
Yeah,
Then not give it another year, I mean.
last thing is, I genuinely don't know. I thought it worked really well. You want to try and encourage teams to make pitches where there's going to be a result. You don't want to just go and watch
Exactly, yeah.
run as fun as it is seeing run fest from time to time, as you always will see. You don't want to encourage draw after draw after draw in the championship. I mean, you look at Division Two last year, and I've already mentioned I think that Glamorgan only had two results throughout the whole season, and they finished fifth. Whereas if you get an extra 3 points for every draw, they're going to very quickly slide up the table, and they might have even challenged for a promotion, which you really don't want to encourage. The fact that teams know that they don't need to get results, and actually, I think it can be a big issue in the first division as well. The fact that teams might, like Surrey, for example, I think teams know that they are a very, very good side, and teams will just create flat tracks against them, take the draw, realize they can walk away with 15, 20 points. Which you can do with draws and bonus points and everything on top of it. I mean, Sussex, who drew on 21 points at the moment, compared to Essex, the only team to win on 25. 4 points is basically nothing. If Essex lose a game, they're going to be miles behind. Obviously, different divisions, so it's a different circumstance. But the fact that you can get 20 points from a draw rather than somewhere in the mid-teens, I think in the long run can have a massive effect. I mean, Essex only finished 4 points ahead of Hampshire last year. Difference between second and third, and as I've already mentioned, down in the second division where promotion is so key to some of these teams. If they get into Division One, they get to play against the bigger sides, they can develop, they can try and retain some of their top talent. If you're in Division Two, a lot of the players are going to be looking for moves, particularly if they want to move to get a game for England. I mean, you look at Dan Lawrence; he's been one of most prolific players in sort of one of the most prolific England players in the last few years. And he's moved away from Essex, who finished second last year, because he wants to try and get game for England. And let alone if you have someone, Tom Haynes, for example, down at Sussex, I'm sure he'll be trying to gun for a move if Sussex don't show any promotion or any chance of getting promoted. I mean, Ali Orr did exactly that. He's moved to Hampshire now because he wants to try and get a game, and he's a young guy who wants to play for England. He wants to win championships. You're going to try and move to bigger teams. And if you're encouraging teams to go in there and just get boring, turgid pitches where it's going to be a guaranteed draw. First of all, crowds aren't going to be interested. If you go to day one and someone, scores 300s, obviously that's a great feat for him, and you'll enjoy that. But you think, well, is it worth me coming back for day two or day three when you know it's going to be a draw? Probably not. And if it's the same week in, week out, crowds are going to be far, far less interested. You want to try and encourage victory and teams creating pitches that challenge, batters as much as possible. Also, doesn't give too much of an opportunity for bowlers. Now, maybe that's what they're thinking, is they don't want Darren Stevens and Tim Murta to take 40, 50 wickets every season, and they maybe want to try and encourage a bit of a flatter pitch. But I think you want to be careful, because I don't think that anyone really had an issue with it last year. No one said, oh, there's too many low scoring matches, there's too many results. No one's ever going to say that. You want to try and encourage them as much as possible. So I don't know. I'd have liked to see them at least give it another couple of years and see how it affected it. Maybe, in the long run, they maybe saw some underlying numbers and thought in the long run it wasn't going to work. But I don't know. For me, I thought it was really good. You want to try and encourage results as much as possible. And that's a
Yeah,
great way to do it.
definitely. It was definitely worth trying at least for another year, if not 2 years. I mean, like you said, that they probably must have seen numbers where they thought it might not work in the long run. But come on, I mean, yeah, I mean, with Test cricket as well, right? There has been a focus on promoting results or having result-oriented pitches. The flip side that you don't want games getting over in like 2 or 3 days. Of course, no one wants that. But I think you're going to challenge yourself, I mean, players more, and teams are going to challenge themselves more by preparing pitches which are result oriented at the end of the day. I mean, you look at the Middlesex game where both teams scored 600, and I think there was literally two innings. I mean, because the third innings there was hardly anything. So yeah, I mean, you don't want those matches as well, right?
Yeah, interesting. Well, one guy's taken county cricket with ease at Essex, Dean Elgar, Toby. What do you make of his start for Essex? And
Yeah, I mean, I've been impressed by him. He's played in the County Championship a few times, played for Surrey a few years ago, and was pretty good. But he's a world-class operator, isn't he? Everyone knows how good he is. He's walked in and proven it, really. Scored what big? Did he get 100 today for Essex yesterday? Maybe not. But yeah, he's looked really good. And Jordan Clark as well for Essex. Lucky enough to speak to both of them. There's some articles out on the Sports Gazette, and they're both, were really excited about coming to Essex for different reasons, really. Dean Elgar was talking about how, Test cricket, and particularly in South Africa, has really taken a tumble, and he wasn't really in love with it anymore, and was kind of done with it. And he always said he dreamt of finishing his career at the County Championship. He's got some English family. And yeah, it's good to see him over here. You always want, some of the best players. I get he's coming towards the end of his career, but the County Championship does attract some of the world's best players. Obviously, you can't get the Indian guys over, but a lot of Aussies. Nathan Lyon, probably one of the best, top three spin bowlers in the world right now. And he's over here. He's not able to play as many games as you would have hoped, I'm sure, because Australia have limited his time. But it's good to see some of these big name guys coming over. And Dean Elgar, yeah, has been fantastic. And I'm sure if Essex want to try and challenge this year, a lot of it will be down to Dean Elgar at the top of the order, and can he score runs? Can he pile on runs and do as well as I'm sure he wants to? And yeah, I think he's going to give them a really good opportunity to win the championship this season. Essex are always good, alongside Sam Cook as well, who has been unbelievable. I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about him in a minute. But Essex are some shrewd operators. They always do well. As I mentioned, finished second last year, only probably one victory away from Surrey. If they manage to do that this year, then they have a very good opportunity to win the whole thing. And yeah, Dean Elgar will be a big part of that, I'm sure.
Yeah, you mentioned him there, Sam Cook. He's pushing for the England squad, isn't he? I mean, Aish, what do you think he'll make that squad, and what do you make of his start to the county championship?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like you said, that he is pushing for that England squad, and I think definitely has got a shot at it. Why not? I mean, he's been doing well, so yeah, it's going to be, I think, a very important season for him because there is still so much competition for places, right? With more and more players coming up as well, it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be difficult. What happens in these situations is that because if there is some competition for places as well, and you're kind of vying with others, sometimes a good season is also not good enough. So the thing is, when the aim is kind of making your national team, and in this case, the England team, how good a season will he have is the question. And I think he'll have to have a really good season because, as we see, it happens especially in countries like England, India, and Australia, where you have got so many options. A good season, like I said a few seconds earlier as well, is just often not good enough.
Yeah, I think he's in such a tough position. The fact he talked
Yeah.
about on a podcast earlier this week, the fact that he's sort of fallen foul to Broad, Anderson, and now Robinson, who are probably, well, two of them are England's two best seamers ever, or at least up there. And Ollie Robinson has sort of not come out of nowhere, but has sort of stepped onto the stage really, really well. And he is basically, he's not the same bowler as them, but he does a similar kind of role, and England wouldn't want to play necessarily all four of them together, or even three of them at times. They try not to. Now Broad's gone, I think definitely opens up at least a spot. The fact that Robinson hasn't maybe been as good in the last couple of years, or in the last sort of year for England, his fitness in particular, is a big question marks around that. And the fact that Jimmy is in his 40s, I think really there's a big opportunity here for Sam Cook, and I think he's really been knocking on the door, and if he can have another unbelievable season, then I think they have to give him at least a game. Maybe if Jimmy calls it at the end of the summer here, I don't think he necessarily will. But I can't imagine Jimmy's going to go on for another, well, I mean, you said this 10 years ago, he's not going to go on for another couple of years, and he goes and he does another decade. So I don't know. I think he will play for England at some point. There's no doubt about that. It's basically just when Jimmy calls it, I think, is going to be when Sam Cook gets an opportunity. Maybe a couple injuries might help, but I think there's a load of really, really, really good seam bowlers in England at the moment. And it's, I mean, the fact Matt Potts was unbelievable, what, 2 summers ago, and hasn't really had a look in since, which seems crazy. He was very, very good, showed a lot of potential, was obviously young. Josh Tung, I absolutely love. Ollie Stone's been injured a lot. Sakeeper Mood's been injured a lot. These are some really, really good young-ish, definitely young compared to Jimmy, seam bowlers. There's a lot of options out there, and they do all offer slightly different things. And it's basically Sam Cook is just slightly too close to James Anderson and Stuart Broad. And I think it will get to a stage where he gets an opportunity, 100%. And I do hope it's the summer. I think he's a really nice guy as well, and I want him to do well.
You mentioned Ollie Stone there. I just wanted to get this in. He's going to be playing village cricket with a friend of the podcast, Monty Panesar, this season. So hopefully he can kind of reignite his career and get into that. They'll be playing for East Anglian Premier League side Great Witchingham in Norfolk. So good luck to him. Yeah, Ayush, what were you going to?
Yeah, no, that was interesting. I think I read a quote from Monty the other day saying that, I mean, he's still hopeful of getting back playing international test cricket. So it's like, if Jimmy Anderson can do it at 41, why not Monty Panesar? And I was like, yeah, there's Monty for you. always the optimist. But Sam Cook, yeah, I mean, was it six for 15 or 20? What did he get? 6 for 14, something
Six
like
for
that.
6 for 14 off 14.
Yeah, I
Unbelievable.
mean, that is good. That is good enough, right? But again, I think, yeah, Toby, I think you summed it up perfectly. Probably comes in after Jimmy goes, which is probably later this year. We don't know. I mean, I never want to say with Jimmy that he's going, because we've been saying that for like 5 years now, and he's still here doing what he does best, still doing it very well. So still fit as ever. So yeah, Sam Cook is someone, again, like I said, that is it going to be good enough? We'll see. 14 for 6 is definitely good enough, but how many more of those is he going to need with so much competition, like I mentioned earlier as well, for places, especially where he plays? So yeah, I mean, and the kind of bowler that he is. But just thinking, another guy that there's been a lot of buzz about is Josh Hill. 6 foot 5, 6 foot 6, something like that, tall bowler. And
6'9", I think, possibly.
wow, that's incredible. 6 foot 9, and that's incredible. So I don't know, I mean, yeah, again, someone who will be who is, like, I think a player to really look out for this season. Because I mean, when you're 6 foot 9 or whatever that is, it's just you have that advantage that no one else has, right? And you can get that ball to rise more than anyone else, and you can do things that no one else can do, as we've seen with so many of those great West Indian bowlers in the past, as well. So yeah, if that he's another guy that I think, I'm not sure if he's been talked about as much as Sam Cook, or he is, like in and around as much as him, but I think definitely another player to look out for.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Cook's only 26, so he's got a lot of time to
He's
break into
got a
that
lot of
squad.
time, and he is going to make it. Again, that's what, like I said, not sure if it's going to happen this summer. I've forgotten. I think, who is it, West Indies, and is it Pakistan as well this summer? I'm not sure.
Sri Lanka at the end of
Sri
the summer, I
Lanka,
think.
yeah. So that'd actually be a very good series to kind of give him an opportunity, wouldn't it? Either of those series. It's not like it's like an Ashes, or it's an India series, or South Africa or something. Those are the series where you'd like to give players an opportunity and just unleash them.
Oh, 100%. I think he really should get an option. This is kind of perfect summer, really, to not phase out Jimmy, but to have him in and around the squad, sort of helping develop the next generation of seamers. Broad's already gone. Jimmy will. To be fair, I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be a little bit surprised, but I wouldn't be that surprised if he's there in Australia in what, a year and a half's time. I think it sounds crazy to go to Australia. He's never done. He's too fair. He's a good bowler in Australia. I think. He probably would only play in one or two of the games at most. But I think, as Ayush said, this is a perfect summer, really, to try and see what the other guys are made of. I mean, you've got to try and see what a post-Anderson future looks like eventually. And yeah, neither West Indies or Sri Lanka are dominant sides. I think they do allow a bit of an opportunity, particularly with the sort of the next year and a half that England do have coming up. They've got. What winter? I think it's Pakistan and New Zealand again this winter, and then they've got India next summer, which will be massive, and Australia after that. They've got Zimbabwe in there as well next summer as well. I think Zimbabwe and India, and then yeah, Ashes down under, which is really going to be how baseball is defined, and they do need to think about that. I mean, we talked about it before. Is the Ashes all, the be all and the end all? And I think for English cricket, particularly as it is right now as well, an Ashes victory down under would be remarkable. I think also actually as well. Sorry, Sam Cook is not playing in this game. He's been rested. He's only missed 3 games in the last 3 years or something, which is crazy, particularly for a seam bowler. And I think that's possibly a good sign that he's not playing. It shows that he's thinking maybe a bit more than, a bit more around not the County Championship. He's possibly thinking about, maybe playing for England if he can rest himself so he is 100%, which I think is a good sign that he isn't just there thinking, how can Essex win it? He's obviously either he's thinking about, that's what he's been told, maybe, maybe give yourself a week off and be back 100% next week. And then you'll be ready to go, hopefully, for England in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, I mean, if like you mentioned earlier, it's kind of take him down under the Ashes. I mean, if people here in India, people back in India are talking about Yadav already for a series in Australia down under, because he can bowl like what 155 plus, and he's just played a few IPL games. I think Sam Cook's more than earned that spot, to at least be talked about playing in a series down under.
Yeah, I mean you can't write Jimmy Anderson off. Anytime
Never.
soon. You can never write Jimmy Anderson off, even when he's 50, he'll probably somehow make a return. But yeah, just quickly, Toby, are there any other players knocking about in the county championship who are kind of should be on England's radar?
Oh, I think the thing with a lot of the guys we've talked about so far is they've probably all been in and around England squads. I mean, even someone like Dan Lawrence, who's probably, second or third reserve, in the England sort of lineup, he's been in and around the squads for a long time now. I think maybe someone like James Roux, down at Somerset, keeper Jamie Smith at Surrey. I think there will be a spot open in the next year or so for a wicket keeper. They're probably the ones in prime position at the moment. Jordan Cox as well. I already mentioned Essex has had a good start as well, and does keep as well, so it could be a good option there to maybe see if he can go in. He moved to try and, he said he wasn't enjoying cricket that much down at Kent, and he's a young guy, and he's moved to Essex and settled in really, really well. I think he went to school around there, so he knows the area, and it's not a massive change for him at least. Bowling wise, I mean, it's good to see Shoaib Bashir back as well. Jack Leach is injured again, which is a real shame, but Bashir stood up well. He bowled really, really nicely against Surrey yesterday, which is good to say from an England perspective, less good from a Surrey fan perspective, that I've got. But yeah, what were his figures in the end? He got a really good wicket. He got Burns out, who was settled on 75 and got that big breakthrough. And yeah, 1 for 76, going at 2 and over. That's basically bang on what you want for your spinner in the first innings in a county championship. Otherwise, I think the kind of England squad is fairly settled, to be fair.
Okay, good stuff. I think we'll call it a day there. Yeah, that was a good pod. Lots to talk about, as always. There's lots going on in the cricket world. But yeah, thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time.